Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, hello and welcome to the first Sunday evening of November 2019, and just welcome to Breaking the Silence. We have a great program for you tonight. Just someone that I had met and heard so much about and had the honor of talking with at Newport Beach, California a few weeks ago. And even the one of the first people that I ran into at Newport Beach this weekend, Friday, at a Counseling Magazine conference. I was speaking there, and one of the first people that came up and introduced themselves to me mentioned Carol's name. So she is a well-known licensed marriage and family therapist, and is known wonderfully and well in the circles of counselors. So she's going to be our guest tonight. And I just want you to write down a couple things, if you would. First of all, our call-in number, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. We'll get you Doug, our producer, and he's right on the line tonight and running the show from California, and he will keep us up and raring, and he will get you on just as soon as we can, and would love to have you call in and comment. I believe Carol's going to be the whole show this evening. I think we have enough information, enough content from her wisdom to be able to run the entire hour tonight. Next week, we have a guest that is really second to none. And I don't know if you have ever heard of the adult chair, but Michelle, and her last name is Shalfault. I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, but C-H A-L-F-A-U-T, has been in the counseling business for years and years, and she has developed some wonderful methods of psychology and spirituality, and she works with energy medicine and NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, and EFT, which is emotional freedom technique, and has all kinds of wonderful things that she's going to be teaching us and telling us about next week. So that'll be next week right here, 8 o'clock Central, Breaking the Silence, each Sunday night for an hour. And I tell you, the next few weeks after that, I have discovered some people out in my last trip to California this past Friday, just a few days ago, that are going to be very interesting guests. And one of them was somebody that came up to me after I spoke and started telling me their story. And it was like, wow, I have to have you on the show. And they're going to be, not next week, but the next couple weeks after that, going to have you on. So we're going to make sure you just tune in. And if you can't catch us live, you can always go to bbsradio.com. Type in Breaking the Silence, and every one of our programs are archived on there, or you can literally push your button on your cell phone and say, Siri, play Breaking the Silence podcast. It'll come up that way. I believe we're to the point of where you can also ask your Amazon person, play Breaking the Silence, and she'll do the same thing. So it's all over the world. It's on over 100 podcast networks, the archives, and but we really appreciate you being here live. So just take some time, go grab a soda, cup of coffee. It's kind of cool here in Houston, Texas. We are still grieving from our loss of the World Series, but I want to let you know, something good had to finally happen in Washington, D.C., and we'll allow the Nationals to win the World Series just so we can say something actually happened good in D.C. This year. So we'll let them take the World Series, and us Astros fans and Houston fans, we're just going to sit back and go, okay, it's nice to see somebody win it for the very first time. So we'll pass that glory on to them this year. But it was awesome to be able to be in that series and at least get that far in that honor. Tonight, as hopefully you got your coffee and your or your soda and a Twinkie or something to chew on. But most of all, we want your ears and your mind and your spirit. Tonight we have Carol Teitelbaum, and Carol is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she is out of Palm Desert, California, and she's the president of the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, the Desert Chapter, and she is a longtime member of Prevent Child Abuse Riverside County, and chairs, listen to this, she chairs the It Happens to Boy Project, and we're really going to dig deep into that. Looking forward to it. I met her and her husband, Robert, a few weeks ago at the counselor, no, that it was at the U.S. Journal training out in Newport Beach, and I had a wonderful chat with them, and both of them are just precious people. They have just completed a conference, and I believe Dave Pelzer was one of the speakers. He's the author of A Child Called It. Matter of fact, Dave endorsed my book, which is just wonderful. And then I think John Lee was there also, or he has been in one of the past, the author of The Flying Boy, and some other awesome guests. We'll let Carol tell more about it. Carol, are you with us tonight? Or are you there? Can you hear me?
I am.
Well, Carol, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. I just can't wait to talk with you and to find out what you're doing and what you're up to, and how's everything going out in California for you?
Very good. We're working on our women's conference now.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, that'll be February 29th, and it's in honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
You know, I want to kind of start at the very beginning because our listeners, some have heard of you. We have counselors listening around the world and people that know of you and are friends with you and people that run circles with you and conferences and things of that order. But folks that may have never heard what you do, what you and your husband, just give me the background, Carol, of what you guys are involved in, what you're excited about, and what you've been doing in your career and in these conferences.
Well, 11 years ago, I got this little higher power message that this was going to be the next phase of my career. And I was very astute in saying, I don't have time for that. And the voice wouldn't go away. And so that was the birth of It Happens to Boys Conference. That was 11 years ago. And everybody said, that's never going to work because the topic is too tender and nobody's going to want to come to that. Nobody's going to hear about it. And it, truthfully, it still is an uphill battle because it's a very taboo subject in a lot of circles, and I'm sure you know that. So we are always knocking on the doors. So we had our first conference 11 years ago, and Jerry Moe, who's the children's director of the children's program at Betty Ford Center, he was our first speaker along with several others. And the second year, this little voice said again, call Dave Pelzer. And I replied, no, he's not going to be able to do that, and I couldn't afford him. And so that voice wouldn't go away, and I called Dave, and I didn't hear back. And then the next year, I was told again, call Dave Pelzer, and sure enough, after a big interview, I passed the interview, And his right-hand woman got on the phone and said, okay, Dave is willing to do your conference for you. And I said, I don't think we can afford him. And she said, you can afford him. And I said, no, I don't know. I don't want to get in debt. I don't know if we can afford him. And she said, Carol, what he wants as payment is a 4x6 American flag.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's been with us 5 times over the 11 years, and he's a remarkable person. He's a great man, and he helps so many people. And one of the years that he was speaking, I was able to get every city in the desert to make March 5th, which is the day he got saved from his home, as Dave Pelzer Day. So each city did a proclamation and presented it to him at our conference. And we had an ROTC band playing for him and presenting. It was really a tear jerker conference. It was amazing. And he couldn't believe that we were able to pull that off. But everything about this conference, including the speakers and the speakers who are willing to reduce their fees, because they believe in what we're doing. And it has been incredible, the speakers that we've had, including John Bradshaw, Dave Pelzer, John Lee, Patrick Carnes, Claudia Black, David White. I mean, really stellar speakers. And the conferences have just been miracles, just miracles.
Okay, now, Carol, if the people out there would like to get involved with attending or just to find out what you're doing in these conferences and where they're located at, when the next ones are coming up, what's the best way to run down information about you and what you're doing in the conference area? How do they get that information?
It's creativechangeconferences.com. That's our website.
Creativechangeconferences.com.
Conferences.com. Mm-hmm. So we had our website up. We have some stories that I've written for different magazines. We have articles about John Lee. He was our speaker this last year, and that conference was just amazing. We have so many miracles that happen at every conference that men who have never told anyone, which, again, you know about from your book and from meeting you, they've never told anyone for so many years, and after the conference and after hearing the speakers, they come up to us and say, that happened to me, that's my story. And I do 2 groups a month that are free for men who have been abused as children, and every man who comes to that group says the same thing. I thought I was the only one.
Yeah. You know, I believe a few weeks ago, John Lee was going to be the speaker at the Counselor Magazine conference that I
went to
Friday, and he had to cancel out. And when he canceled out, the time that Pete got the email saying, I can't make it, my email followed with, hey, Pete, it was great to meet you in Newport Beach a few weeks ago. If you ever need me, call me. He picked up the phone and just called me. He said, can you come out to replace John? And I said, I would love to. And then it just went awesome. I got a standing ovation. It just went great. People, I met so many wonderful people. And then when I got to the conference Friday morning, 2 or 3 hours early, Tanya Brown, that was going to be the keynote early that morning, had hurt her leg either at the airport or on the way or something, and she was running late. So Pete looked at me and said, Greg, can you come on and just cover? So I just stood up and started talking
and
just went into that mode. But it's interesting how things happen, and I really personally think things happen for a reason, and there's no happenstance. There's no just by chance. And I think even meeting you, the other day when Gary said, hey, I have a couple people that I want to hook up with you, and was a blessing too. So now here we are. I consider you a friend, and you're on the show with us and sharing your wisdom. Yeah. So how many, listen, where was the conference at, this last one you just had? It happens to boys. Where was
it? Oh, it was at ABC Recovery in Indio, and we had 203 people, which is a really nice crowd for there. And it was filled with therapists, some survivors, recovery centers, physicians, psychiatrists, law enforcement, nurses. It was a great audience, of mixture of audience. And we really push people to come and hear what we have to say. We go speak at recovery centers because people need to talk about this. We talk about sexuality. We talk about abuse. We talk about all sorts of abuse, from physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. You know, it's not just sexual abuse that's damaging, because all abuse damages children. And we need to talk about it. People need to get comfortable talking about it, because if we don't, people that are abused are not going to speak up. And it's such a hard thing, especially for men, because men have been taught since the age of 4, when they started understanding language, don't share your feelings. Don't cry. For God's sakes, don't cry. Big boys, don't cry. Don't share your feelings. Don't ask for help. Don't be vulnerable. Don't need anything. And so that's the definition they get of being a real man. Women don't have that. When women are abused, they feel like damaged goods, but they don't ever feel like not real women. But men actually feel like they're not real men, that they should have been able to do something to protect themselves. And we have this T-shirt project that we do, and all the T-shirts are size 6 to 8, because that's when most abuse happens. And so the assignment is to paint your childhood pain. And the men put their current age on the shirt, and then they paint a picture that depicts their childhood pain. And then we bring these shirts around where we speak, and people sometimes will look at it and go, oh, that's cute. And then they look closer, and they go, oh. So we have a picture of what their abuse looked like to them. And when men tell me, I should have been able to protect myself, when we go out and speak, we hold a T-shirt up against them so they can see today that there's no way that little boy could have protected himself against a grown man. Because T-shirt is little, size, you can imagine, size 6 to 8. And they see, oh my gosh, I couldn't have. And they didn't ever realize that. Because when we look back at our childhood, we see ourselves as more capable, as stronger, as taller than we really were. And so many men have told me, I took care of all my siblings. I cooked dinner. I had to go get food, or we didn't have food. And I had to keep them from crying when mom and dad were fighting. And I go, you were just a little boy. I go, no, I was big. I was strong. I was capable. I go, no, you were this big, and then the tears come. And it's so
Carol,
beautiful.
That's a powerful illustration.
It is. We have 100 shirts.
Wow, that's powerful.
Sometimes at our conferences, we put them up on clotheslines so that people can see all of them all at once, and it's just breathtaking.
Is there any of those pictures on your website?
I think so, but I can send you some.
Okay, I would love to share that with not all of them, of course, but one that has opened that up to say, hey, you can share this with the public. That's a powerful illustration. Go ahead.
One of the most powerful ones is this man who he was in recovery instead of going to prison. He was really a tough character. He had tattoos everywhere, all over his face, his neck, his ears, and on his eyelids. And that's what got me the most, was the eyelids. And he did this picture of this park-like setting. It was pastel colors. It was absolutely beautiful. And I said, but this is beautiful. He said, no, look closely. And when you look closely, you could see the swing was broken. And he said, that was what my house was like. It was perfect on the outside, but so sick on the inside, and nobody knew because it looked so perfect, and nobody ever wanted to check on me. And I was being so badly abused, but nobody knew. And that's one of the most powerful shirts that we have, because people don't understand that they need to look more closely. They need to look at signs. They need to look at when boys start changing and things happen to them where they're just not that same little boy anymore. People don't pay attention.
Oh, that's powerful, Carol. I'll tell you what. What I want to do right now, we're going to take our first break.
Okay.
When we come back, I just want to kind of, because we really don't have, we're just having conversation. I kind of like it this way. I want to find out when we come back what some of the things that if I was sitting in front of you and you was counseling me for the first time that I have come out about me being abused, what some of the first advice that you would offer me that you think so vital at the beginning of that opening stages of letting people inside of what's happened to your past. So we're going to come back, and I'm going to pick your brain a little bit and see how deep we can get inside there to get the wisdom that you have.
Okay.
If you have a fantastic, if you want to call in, 888-627-6008. You are listening to Breaking the Silence, and our guest tonight is Carol Teitelbaum, and make sure you keep listening, and we'll be back in about a minute and 7.5 seconds.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. I appreciate that. And hopefully you all be able to get online and look that up. And it's right there on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It was kind of neat. I was out in L.A. and when I went by the Barnes & Noble, I ran in there real quick, and there my book was, right there on the shelf. And that's kind of, I just love that. I've always had a dream about that. So we have Carol with us tonight, and Carol Teitelbaum. And Carol, I want to, you've kind of, you've taken a layer off my heart tonight, and you're starting to pluck a string or two. And I want to let you know that I'm hearing music. And when you get inside of me, it gets me excited in a way now. It probably mm-hmm. wouldn't have been so exciting a few years ago. But tell me, I want some wisdom. What if we have a listener or two, and maybe thousands tonight, that have never told anybody, man or woman, but let's say man, just for the sake that, you know, that's what your conference was on, and you had those support groups, even though you have women conferences too. What's mm-hmm. some of the first advice that you would offer to that client, that person, that hurting man in front of you, when they just kind of let the cat out of the bag, I was abused? What's some of that first wisdom that you pour out to them?
The first thing that I say is, I want you to feel safe. So what do you need to have happen in this session that will make you feel safe? I've worked with lots and lots of men, and a lot of men come to therapy now because they've either seen our billboard, they've read some of the books that our authors have written, they've come to our conferences and heard about it. They heard about me on a radio show or heard me being interviewed. And some men have come forward because they heard me being interviewed. So I ask them that. Then I also tell them it's not the stranger danger that we have to worry about, because 93% of perpetrators are family members. And I understand how difficult it is to talk about a family member who's hurt you, because no matter what happens and how a family member hurts us, they're our family and we still love them. And so many men feel guilty that they still love the person that perpetrated against them. Ooh. And we were at a children's facility with all boys, and every one of those boys was sexually abused. And we were there for Christmas, and we are asking what was on their Christmas list. And they said to spend time with my family, even though that family sexually abused them. So we have such a push-pull for that because we love that person, and they hurt us so badly. And So we talk about the fact that it's okay to talk about it and the percentages of perpetrators. And we also talk a lot about regulating emotions because I don't want somebody to be triggered and leave my office because so many men who are in recovery centers are actually sexual abuse survivors, but they don't tell anyone. And so they get abstinent from drugs and alcohol. They go out into the world and get triggered by something, and then they can't handle it, and they haven't dealt with it yet, so they go back to use. And once they use drugs and alcohol, that shame goes away for maybe the first time in their life, and it's really hard to give that up. So I want them to know that they will get triggered. We've actually been to recovery centers where we've worked with the staff, and one of the staff members said, damn it, I'm a counselor, I have a master's degree, a PhD, I've been counseling for 5 years, and I got triggered Sunday. And I said, what happened? He goes, I was in an AA meeting, and it was in the pew in the church, and this man got up to leave the pew, and his belly brushed against my back, and I had my hands in the air, and I screamed. He said, how come? I said, because you're a human. And we all have triggers that can happen. We can't, no matter how much therapy you get and no matter what modality you use, you can still get triggered sometime.
Explain triggers to people that may not know what a trigger is.
Imagine
a trigger on a gun. Yeah.
Imagine that a man who abused you is wearing Old Spice. This is from years ago.
Oh, my land. Did you read my book? Because that's in there. Old Spice
I
is
did.
In there. Oh, no, Carol.
Yes. So
okay,
imagine,
go ahead.
Okay, imagine that happens. And so that smell is now a trigger for you. So a man could walk by you. Not that many men wear Old Spice anymore, but a man could walk by you on the street and you smell Old Spice and your heart starts racing and you get scared and you don't even sometimes know why, because your body has memories just like your mind has memories. And once a memory gets triggered in the body, it reacts. So you can react in a way of acting out from your little child inside. You can become 8 years old again. And you're scared to death. And the man in you is not aware of what's going on yet. Sometimes those things don't connect. So I really work with people about triggers. I do the ACE study with them. I have them do the questionnaire. And that stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And that was done by Kaiser Permanente and the Center for Disease Control. It's a 12-year study by this time and 17,000 participants. And they could pretty much predict what if your score is over 4, that you're going to have certain psychological issues, certain learning disabilities, certain physical ailments. So all these things are happening, and this man is now going, wait a minute, you mean there's that many people out there who've gone through what I've gone through? Yes. It's 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 4 boys are sexually abused by the time they're 18. And they look at me with these big eyes. And
is that the new stats? Because, you know, I use 1 in 4, 1 in 6, but I've always said I think that's wrong.
Yes, I think so, even 1 in 3, 1 in 4 is wrong, to tell you the truth, because everywhere we go, I can't tell you how many people come up to us. And I'm pretty sure that's just reported numbers. So those are the California numbers that we use. Those are by Riverside County. And yeah, it's a lot of people. So there's a lot of men out there with your story. And the first step is telling your story. The next step is journaling, keeping track of your dreams, you know, writing letters to that little child that you once were and letting him know that there's an adult man on board now who can protect him. I do a lot of mindfulness meditation. I also do NLP. You were talking about that in the beginning, the neurolinguistic programming. And what that is I anchor positive feelings in somebody where they can, like, touch a finger and thumb together, and we anchor those positive feelings there, and I have them go through a guided imagery. And so then when they get triggered, they can touch their finger and thumb together, and their body relaxes. And the mindfulness
meditation. Okay, that's called NLP?
Yes. It's a wonderful technique.
I'm out at Walmart and somebody walks by and they have Old Spice on and my heart starts racing.
Mm-hmm.
So some of your trigger responses of instead of letting the stress overtake you, besides this touching of the forefinger and the thumb, are there some other things that, you know, because I used to use the rubber band technique where
yes.
I would start snapping it on my wrist or on my ankle, and people thought I was, I don't even know if people noticed.
Yeah, because pain is a grounder. So when you snap that rubber band, pain is a grounder, and it gets you back to now. And that's what we want to do is now. Be in the now. I'm not that little boy anymore. I have an adult man who can take care of me. And it's okay. I've got you. I've got your back. No one's going to hurt you. And so we do a lot of that, a lot of mindfulness, staying in the present moment, breathing techniques that help you calm your body down. And so there's a lot of things that people can do that can get them back in the present moment and away from those painful triggers. Because emotionally you can turn into, like one of my clients, she was with her boyfriend and they had a really fun night and she went to the restroom and she came back and she started screaming, "Get out, get out, get out." And he goes, "I'm not dressed." And she said, "I don't care, get out." And he had to run out like in the movies with his clothes and his shoes naked in the night, and she wouldn't talk to him for 3 days. And she called finally and said, "When I came down the hall, I saw your shoes by the bed. They were the same shoes my father wore at the same place he left them at the bed when he was abusing me. And I turned into a 10-year-old girl." She didn't say, "I felt like a 10-year-old girl." She said, "I turned into a 10-year-old girl." So that's what happens. That little kid part of us pops out, acts out, gets us in trouble. And we need to have that adult person there going, "I've got you. It's okay. It's not happening right now. Nobody's hurting us. Breathe, breathe, breathe. Get grounded. Feel your feet on the floor. Feel the air on your skin. Breathe. Take a deep breath. Hold it. Breathe out." And it won't take very long after you learn how to do that to get grounded and centered again. So that's the main issue that I want people to have, is to be able to take care of themselves.
Once you get me talking,
you can't shut me up.
Oh no! I love it. You're the expert. I'm just taking all this in. Do you find also triggers of the men that you have counseled and talked with over the years about maybe certain times of the year besides holidays, certain seasons, certain times of a day? Do you have any wisdom on that, of how some people react to different triggers on time and seasons and times of the year?
It could be anything that reminds you of your abuse can be a trigger. So it could be Saturday night you got abused. So Saturday night starts to creep around and you get really anxious. It could be Christmas time. You could smell the Christmas trees. You could hear the bells ringing. It's like, oh no. And you don't even know why. And when the sun isn't out for as long, when fall comes and starts getting dark earlier, it's like, oh no, the abuse is going to happen earlier now. And anything that goes in through your senses that you see, you hear, you touch, you taste can be a trigger to you. Because anything that reminds you of the abuse, it could be, we were speaking for medical students, and one of the men, we told them, if you get triggered, you need to leave. It's okay. Go to the restroom, wash your face, but come back if you can. And Robert was speaking that time, and a man got up, he was a medical student, and ran out of the room. And he didn't come back until we were done. And he told Robert, "I'm sorry, but you look just like my father, and he abused me, and I just couldn't sit here and look at you." Wasn't his father, he knew that, but he couldn't stand that there were so many similar features. And he got triggered, and he's a medical student. And he was so apologetic, we're like, "No, you're human. Anybody can get triggered." And I told him the story about the staff member at this recovery center, and he goes, "Oh, that makes me feel better." So it can happen to anybody. And it's just important we take care of ourselves and just notice how our body's feeling And when I also do the emotional freedom technique with the tapping, teach people how to do that, which helps relieve anxiety. So I wish we were on air. I could show you these things.
I've heard about the tapping. I have read a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be like a pretty successful technique.
They're starting to do that in preschools out here. And my friend has a daughter who's 4, and she came in, and she's tapping her forehead, and she goes, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm relieving stress." She was 4. But, you know, if we teach kids that now at this age, they're going to be really great adults when they grow up.
Well, that's the neat thing that I love when I travel, and I know you do too, mm-hmm. going around and meeting people and getting to talk and everybody's different stories, is you can always pull out something out of 100 different ways people deal with stress or trauma in their past. Is just, if I can just grab one idea from them that I can use and go, wow, that actually works for me.
This doesn't.
But, you know, if you can find, you just keep trying stuff until you do. And one of the things that I really had to end up doing not too long ago, probably 6 months ago, is I did a self-audit on myself of when I was starting to understand and feel. Because I think that's what you possibly could have meant. You have to know what's going on with your body. But I started recognizing that certain times of the day, I would be really antsy. And I was thinking, well, maybe I'm not eating right. Or maybe, I know I'm not eating right, but maybe, you know, Cheetos for lunch every day or something's not good for me. So, you know, so I started to audit that and start writing those things down. And I'll be doggone if it wasn't the same time of the day, every day. And then I plugged into, wait, that's when my dad picked me up from school every
day.
That's
right.
And your brain does not forget that stuff.
No. And a couple of other things that I'd like to say is, one is men have felt very guilty if it felt good. And our bodies are sensual beings. And if somebody touches us in a sensual way, it's going to feel good. But you know the difference between abuse and a sensual experience when after it's over, you feel terrible, or after it's over, you feel wonderful. So you know if it feels icky at the end that it wasn't a good thing. But while it's happening, you can't help your body feeling sensual feelings. And especially if the perpetrator was a woman, boys don't get much empathy for having a woman perpetrator. They get high fives. And then it's really difficult for them to talk about it because everybody says you're lucky. And they're not lucky. They're not available. They're not old enough to understand. They don't have the education about what sex means or understand it, or their body's not developed enough. And it's painful to them. It's not a yay for you. It's not a good thing. And then they can grow up and really be angry with women and take out that on all the women that they are with. So that's not a healthy situation to be in. So it's really important that people understand that men have so much shame when they're abused because they feel like they should have been able to protect themselves, that they feel bad if they liked it. They can't tell anyone because who's going to believe them? And especially if their perpetrator is a pillar of the community. One of the men in our group, he was abused by a Catholic priest who's a principal of a high school in Orange County. And nobody believed him. And he went to the church and asked for help to get money for therapy. And they told him, you know, go away. We don't want to talk to you. You're lying. And so he brought about a lawsuit just to get money for therapy. And what happened was they sued him for bringing about a frivolous lawsuit. And it wasn't until 14 other boys came forward and said, me too, that they won the case. And they got a lot of money, but that doesn't help anything because that's not what it's all about. It wasn't about the money. And they couldn't spend it fast enough because it was dirty money.
Wow. I tell you what, we're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your thoughts about shame and guilt.
Yes.
And then also when we come back, why boys don't talk about
Yes, I was just going to talk about
they hold it in. So I want to jump into that and really dig deeper. 1-888-627-6008. Make sure you call in. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be coming back for the last segment of Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and we're on the last segment of this awesome show. We have a wonderful guest with us tonight, Carol Teitelbaum, and she has just been speaking of her experience and her counseling wisdom and the things that she's seen and have counseled and helped people with in the support groups and the conferences she has around the country, and just some wonderful wisdom tonight. Carol, if you could, tell me what your take is on shame and guilt when we realize, although maybe we don't realize at the beginning, but I dealt with this for years, and I think sometimes I still do at 56 years old, 56, I think I'm 56, yeah, 56 years old. What's your take on how shame and guilt affect us and that baggage is that we carry every day?
So guilt is about something that you did that you feel is wrong. Shame is about you feeling like something's wrong with you. And there's a big difference. So having that shame of a man who's been abused because they feel like they're not a real man. So little boys turn off their heart energy at 4 when they're told, in order to be a real man, you have to buck up, don't cry. You know, be a real man, don't share your feelings, don't ever be vulnerable. And so they learn very soon not to share those feelings because people will think something's wrong with them, or they're a sissy, or they're acting like a girl. Or if a little boy is straight and a man abuses him, he's afraid to talk about it because he's afraid people will think he's gay. And if he's gay, they're afraid to talk about it because people say you probably wanted it. And it's so ridiculous when you think about it, but people actually say these things. We were at a family health event, and we had our pictures and T-shirts up, and this woman came up and said, well, if it weren't for gay men, boys wouldn't be abused. And I had to explain to her that abuse is not about sex. It's about power. It's about somebody who doesn't feel good about themselves taking power over somebody who's vulnerable. And it took a lot of education for people to understand that because they don't understand. And that's why we go speak everywhere that we do, because people need to learn that this is not about sex. Like men in prison are having sex with each other, but they're not gay. They just want sex. So they take who's ever there. And it's a hard concept for people to understand, but if we talked more about sexuality and we're more open about it, it wouldn't be that hard to get. And I wanted to also talk about porn because that's really important, that men who are survivors, I often get turned on to porn as part of the abuse, and their perpetrator will show them porn really young, like 10, 12 years old. And then they start, as they get older, they turn to porn because they're too afraid to be with someone. They're afraid, they're ashamed, they don't want anybody to see the pain in their eyes or the shame in their eyes. So they don't want anybody looking in their eyes, and they push people away. So they keep going back to porn. And then when they actually get with a real live person, they can't perform. And now we have a new disorder called porn-induced erectile dysfunction, because men have been using porn so much that when they get with a real person, they can't perform anymore. And that's a huge problem for relationships, for self-esteem, for shame. I mean, you can imagine all the consequences of that. And this all comes from being abused and not being able to talk about it and not being able to have that innocent childhood experience of learning about your body on your own and understanding what feels good and what doesn't. And then getting old enough to date and learning about somebody else's body. And somebody actually steals that experience from you and you never get it back. You never get back that innocent first relationship. And that's so sad. It really is tragic. And it helps people not trust anyone. That's probably the biggest damage that's done to survivors, is that they can no longer trust anybody. And that's really hard to have a relationship when you don't trust anyone.
Yeah, you always have a wall up.
A big wall.
You don't want anybody else around. Yeah, that wall gets really thick. And I did that for years. I didn't want anybody on the other side of the wall with me, because once you get back there, you're going to hurt me. Everybody that's got close to me has hurt me. And I did not want, just until just recently, I'm starting to literally open up doors that I have had locked for years. Don't get close to me, because I know what you're going to do. And, I questioned, one of the things that I had, one of the hardest difficulties with, was before I told anybody, I was afraid other men were going to look and question my manhood.
Yeah.
And that I wasn't going to be able to be a man anymore. And I know that's kind of funny sounding, but that ran through my mind, that I was going to be questioned I was even, fit to be a man. You said something.
Because that's the messages boys get. To be a real man, you have to do all those things that I mentioned. And if you don't, then you're no longer a real man.
You said something about at 4 years old, your heart gets shut off. What was that line that you used at the very beginning?
For boys at four, they shut down their heart. And at 11 or 12, girls start losing their self-esteem. So there's a big difference, because girls at 11 or 12 start really caring what people think of them. And they care how they look, and they care what people think, and they care what they're wearing, and they're so concerned about fitting in and being one of. But little boys at 4 years old know all of a sudden now how I feel. It's not acceptable to anybody in my family. It's not acceptable to my male teachers. It's not acceptable to my coaches as they get older. It's just not acceptable. There's no crying in baseball, right? So they shut down so young. And it's so hard for men to, number one, go get help, to go to the doctor, go to the dentist, to get an exam, to have somebody look in their eyes and saying, I want to get to know you. Tell me about yourself. Those are the worst words a survivor can hear, is tell me about yourself. I want to get to know you. And they're like, oh, no, we're not doing that. Because if you know my secret, you're going to run away, or you're going to call me names, or you're going to push me away or abandon me or hurt me. And that's what they really feel. So the wall is up, like you said. There's armor on them, and they don't want to crack that armor.
I met a gentleman. I met a gentleman just in Newport Beach a couple days ago, and he pulled out a piece of paper, and he says, "Let me just show you what I got the other night." And he started drawing as fast as he could, and he drew all these bricks, and he did the old Kilroy was here picture.
Yes.
And I don't know if you remember that from the early 50s,
yes,
whatever
I
that
do.
Was. And he started putting on each one of these bricks fear, shame, guilt. And he went all the way up this wall. And he said, "Greg, I want you to use this." Because when you mentioned the wall, he said, that's what we need to start taking down. at each one of these times that we talk and say, today we're going to try to put shame to the side. Today we're going to try to put fear to the side and start breaking it down, because that wall stays up sometimes for people. What is it, 85 to 93% of the people never tell anybody they were ever abused? And is that that high with boys as it is girls, or male as it is female? Or I can imagine it maybe be even higher for men. Do you know?
Well, because girls were taught it's okay to share their feelings. They talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know, they do games that are face-to-face. Boys do games that are side-by-side, and they don't look in each other's eyes. Girls look in each other's eyes, and they talk about things. And they've been encouraged to talk about things, and they don't get shamed for sharing their feelings. They're actually expected to share their feelings. But boys aren't. They do things side-by-side, watch a game, go in a car, you know, do something side-by-side, and they don't look in each other's eyes. In fact, there's a great movie that your male listeners could watch. It's called The Kid with Bruce Willis, and it gives such a great depiction of finding your inner child and learning how to feel again. Because Bruce went through some verbal abuse in the movie, and he made a decision that, like I was saying about our T-shirts, the size 8 to 10, you can make a decision at 8 or 10 years old that no one's ever going to fill in the blank. No one's ever going to hurt me again. No one's ever going to hit me. No one's ever going to get close to me. No one's ever going to see me cry. No one's ever going to whatever. You decide, and you try to live your whole life based on a decision you made when you're 8 years old. And it might work great when you're 8 or 10 or 12, but not so much when you're an adult. And that really gets in the way of our relationships. And what I do with my male clients is I tell them, I don't want you to have a block wall. I want, that takes too long to knock that down. I want you to put the wall in hydraulics so that you can put it up and you could put it down. So you could put it down a little bit and look over and see what's over there. And as soon as you need to, you can put that wall back up. And we're just going to keep playing with that. How long can you keep the wall down? Who can you keep the wall down with? How soon do you need to put it back up? And you're in charge. You've got the button. Because they're scared if they knock down those bricks, then what? What happens now? I'm too vulnerable. What if I get triggered? What's going to happen if somebody hurts me? And it's scary for them to just knock the wall down all at once. So I have them put it on hydraulics so they can do it themselves.
Beautiful illustration, too. That's awesome. Hey, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, it went fast.
I love this, Carol. How do we work within the medical profession of this? Just in a nutshell, I know you only have a few seconds, but what's your recommendation on how we need to get inside the medical profession with this kind of help?
The training that we do with medical professionals and medical students is, number one, put on your intake sheet, is there anything the doctor needs to know about your history that will make your exam go easier for you? Because if you ask the question, are you an abuse survivor, people, especially men, are going to say no. But if you leave it open-ended, they're much more likely to tell you something. And then once you know that and you have a trauma-informed practice, then you can make sure that you're not doing anything to hurt that person, and they're not going to do anything to hurt you. Because when we tell medical students and physicians, if you don't know how to deal with a survivor, you could get hurt. Their ears perk up. What do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean I could get hurt? So if you touch a survivor, come up without getting their permission, or come up behind them and touch them, or say, take off your shirt, or anything like that, they could have a knee-jerk reaction and they could end up punching you.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, flailing their arms, and you could be behind them and you could get knocked out. And they're like, oh my God, we better listen to what you have to say, because they had no idea that that could happen.
Fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, Carol, I have enjoyed this hour so much, and I just appreciate you being
with us.
And,
Me too.
I really hope that you keep on making the impact on the world that you're doing with these women conferences and these It Happens to Boys conferences. And I do hope and pray that one day that we'll be able to work on the same stage together. And
I hope so.
You ever need somebody to fill in for someone, or I would love to come at the drop of a hat. To be with you someplace in some part of this country.
Okay,
tell Robert I said hi.
And, I will. He awesome says hi to, back.
Okay, very good. And I'll see you hopefully in California soon. And Carol, thank you for joining us tonight. People,
thanks
I just want to let you know,
me.
Listeners, thank you for your most. We just appreciate you listening tonight, and we want to let you know that no matter what you're in right now, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what situation you are involved with and what's going on in your mind and in your life, there's always hope. There's always hope. Hang on to that and never give up. Join us next week right here at 8 p.m. Central Time for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.